Relatively Geeky presents
Doomspeak.
The Merry Marvel Marching Society crossover event, Acts of Vengeance, The Punisher 28 and 29. Welcome to the Merry Marvel Marching Society, where we, along with some of our favorite buddies in the world of comic book podcasting, have joined forces to cover the classic Marvel event, Acts of Vengeance. But first, a little feedback. Last time we talked about issue 10, the last issue of the wonderful ongoing Doctor Doom series, and we heard from Ranger Gord, host of the Prairie Justice podcast, and Gord had some thoughts. Such doomish goodness doth this magazine exude, extrude, and intrude into our collective hearts that only Lord Victor may possess. Though it does sadden me that this can only, nay must, be the end of Marvel Comics as a whole, since a company doom-vided against itself cannot possibly stand. How wonderful that 'twas his doomishness that swung the axe on the House of Doomdias. Now hopefully, this collected tome can replace those many fillers found at Doomazon, Doomstone Books, the Doom York Public Library, and the very Interdooms themselves. Now, I must humbly retreat from this missive, lest I not be worthy enough to have uttered his name as often as I have. Hail Quarters, hail Professors, hail Doom Hio, and hail Doom. Thank you, Ranger Gord, for that typically calm, collected, and eminently reasonable and well-thought-out commentary. I will say, Ranger, it has been a pleasure sharing this Doctor Doom ongoing comic book experience with you. Of this era, this time frame, which will be known as the era of the ongoing. And now, that era is past, and I do hope that Gord, I do hope that all of us, will stay tuned to this podcast as we continue to review tales of Doom's glory, past, present, and future. Additional social media support for that last episode came from Ed Moore from Teal Productions, Karen from Between the Pages, James Williams from Karen, Chris Lydon, Paul from The Collected Edition, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Dr. Ange, Manuel Carmona, Sir Luke Giaconetti, Pat from The Longbox Crusade, Serge Bamba, Gene Hendricks from The Hammer Strikes blog and podcast, Vic in Phoenix, the Mark's Mess podcast, and our listeners of the year, the kind and lovely Sutherlands from the Rad Adventures Network. Okay, let's move on to what we are actually focusing on this episode. So, I want to talk about this event that we are participating in. In the past, Relatively Geeky has joined forces on occasion and participated in the J.L. May podcasting crossover event. And last year, when we were kicking around the idea of what to do here in 2021, the thought of doing a Marvel equivalent came up, seeing as by its nature, J.L. May is DC-focused. So the concept of moving the event forward a few months here in 2021, and rebranding it as the Merry Marvel Marching Society was landed on, agreed to, and Acts of Vengeance was selected as the topic for this first Marvel March podcasting crossover event. And that old fan hole, Derek William Crabb, took the lead on organizing this event. He put together the list of issues, the spreadsheet that we all that we participants all used. He put together the promo, and maybe most importantly, he kept this motley crew of geeks in line so that a good number of podcast episodes actually have been so far, will continue to be, and will continue to be released during March. Good job, Derek. So let me talk about this comic book event, Acts of Vengeance, before diving into our two issues of The Punisher. And we find this on Wikipedia, which, by the way, is not a primary source. Acts of Vengeance is a comic book crossover storyline that ran through several titles published by Marvel Comics from December 1989 to February 1990. This company-wide crossover was centered on the Avengers and the Fantastic Four after three consecutive prior crossovers were built around the X-Men and related mutant teams. Promotional materials teased the idea of a wide array of supervillains facing heroes they had never met or were not part of the hero's regular rogues gallery. The setup is that a mysterious stranger, spoilers, the Asgardian guard Loki in disguise, and he coerces a group of master supervillains to join forces in a conspiracy to destroy the superhero team, the Avengers. Loki does this to strike back at his adopted brother, Thor. The supervillain team consists of Doctor Doom. And, well, I guess a couple other people like Kingpin, Magneto, the Mandarin, the Red Skull, and the Wizard. But mostly, Doctor Doom! Loki also attempts to recruit Apocalypse, Cobra, and the Mad Thinker, but they all decline. He also approached Namor, but was rejected when Namor stated that he is not a villain anymore. To assist these master villains, Loki engineers a jailbreak at the vault. The lesser villains are then directed against heroes, mainly the Avengers and Spider-Man, who have never fought them before, the theory being that the unfamiliarity will act in the villain's favor. While they did manage to give many of the heroes unusual fights, that is actually where I'm going to stop reading this because spoilers for these issues and many other issues that are covered by my podcasting colleagues follow. So, to reiterate, the basic premise, heroes fighting villains with whom they are unfamiliar. For example, in this one, we have the hero Dr. Doom, fighting a villain in The Punisher that he's not familiar with. By the way, in total, more than 70 issues carried the Acts of Vengeance banner. So with that information to whet your appetites, let's take a break, play the promo for this event, and when we come back, we will dive mercilessly into The Punisher 28, and 29.
There was an idea.
To bring together a group of remarkable people.
To see if we could become something more.
So when they needed us, we could make the podcasts.
That they never could.
In time, you will know what it is like to cross over. To feel so desperately that the comic is right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. March 2021 still arrives.
Evacuate the network. Engage all defenses. And get this man a cold Mountain Dew.
Ooh, a cold Mountain Dew. I haven't tried one of those. Nah. Make it warm. Thank you.
Fun isn't something one considers when podcasting an event. But this does put a smile on my face.
Who the hell are you guys?
The Merry Marvel Marching Society. We don't know where we're going, but we're on the way.
A podcasting crossover mega event in the spirit of JL May. Coming in March 2021. Covering Marvel's fall crossover event, Axe of Vengeance.
A cabal of evil threatens the Avengers and the entire Marvel Universe.
Dr. Doom, the Red Skull, Kingpin, Dr. Doom, Magneto, the Wizard, Dr. Doom, the Mandarin, and Dr. Doom have banded together to pit Earth's mightiest heroes against foes they have never faced before.
An array of heroes face enemies they are totally unfamiliar with.
But who is secretly pulling the vengeful cabal strings?
And can the Avengers take down the true mastermind before his hidden scheme succeeds?
Featuring podcasts from Third Degree Burn, Back to the Bins Avenger Spotlight, Coffee and Comics, Comic Book Time Machine, Doom Speak, Fan Holes Podcast, Fire and Water Podcast Network, Head Speaks, Into the Weird, Justice, Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast, Longbox Crusade, Married with Comics, The Quantum Cast, Resurrections, an Adam Warlock podcast, Rolled Spine Podcasts, and Views from the Longbox.
Marching its way to your favorite podcatchers and hosting sites in 2021.
Act of Vengeance, a true story.
And we're back. In terms of covering these issues, we're going to run the synopses together and then do the analysis after that. So we start with The Punisher 28, which had a cover date of mid-December 1989 and a cover price of $1. The cover by Bill Reinhold shows Frank Castle shock and surprise on his face as he finds himself surrounded on all sides by five Dr. Dooms. The cover explains it clearly. Surrounded by Doom. And the cover, I think it does exactly what it needs to do. It draws your attention to the most important part of the cover, the issue, the event, and frankly, all of comics. Everywhere you look, like Frank Castle, you see a Doom. And now why every comic book does not do this, load up images of Dr. Doom on their covers, I just don't understand. You're leaving money on the table. The story, Change Partners and Dance, was written by Mike Baron with art by Bill Reinhold and Mark Farmer. Although those credits are nowhere to be found in the issue itself, that fact was corrected a few issues later. These full credits appear in issue 30. And in the interest of full disclosure, let me thank the Marvel Comics Chronology at supermegamonkey.net for providing the jumping off points for these synopses. Again, super, to repeat, that is supermegamonkey.net because internet. Punisher. 28 starts, as it should, as every comic should. Frankly, as every work of fiction should. Heck, probably every textbook should as well. And that is, it starts with a page devoted solely to Dr. Doom. Our leader is sitting at a desk spinning a globe. Next, Wilson Fisk enters the room, addressing Doom as a deposed despot. Doom is not pleased to be dealing with a gangster, dealing with the criminal element. They banter for a few pages, each one warning the other that they don't know whose operation this is. Each one believes that he is in charge. Doom points out that Fisk has been unable to rid himself of the Punisher, whom he describes as a determined gadfly. Doom has inside access to Fisk's numbers, pointing out that the Punisher was your single greatest expense last year. Doom invites Fisk to meet him back right here in 1 week. You'll see how a deposed despot deals with your problem. At this point, we shift perspective to that of the Punisher, which is reasonable, all things considered. I double-checked, and this comic book is actually called The Punisher. Frank has intercepted a message from a gunrunner, and he's posing as a buyer. He arrives 2 hours early to survey the rendezvous, but he doesn't arrive early enough, and who he's meeting is not a Quebec-based lowlife. I am Victor Von Doom. I arranged to meet you here by posing as Joe Spiff. Frank is very confused, wondering why the two of them have a beef. And Doom admits that they don't. Frank stalls him long enough to have the battle van fire at Doom, completely obliterating him. Or does it? And bleepin' a robot, I should have known. Doom likes to play weird mind games with his enemies. Punisher figures out that Doom probably cut a deal with the Kingpin, but before he can get too far down that line of thinking, he finds a tank rolling down the street right at him. Standard Latveria issue. You must have airdropped it in last night. Frank manages to escape, but the vat... Frank manages to escape the battle van in time, but his vehicle is completely leveled. Microchip picks Frank up a few hours later and is pretty mad that another van has been destroyed, even more so when he learns that it was destroyed by Doom. Frank, how can you do this to me? Why don't you pick on somebody your own size? Frank, how can you do this to me? Why don't you pick on somebody your own size? Frank wants to take the fight to Doom personally, which, when you think about it, may not have been his best idea ever. But Microchip manages to find a critical piece of art, a Fabergé egg that is the equivalent to the Latverian crown jewels. And Frank decides to break into the castle to steal it. And 36 hours later, they are at the Austrian-Latverian border. For 2 days they climb, until at last, the morning of the third, they approach the castle. Doom, back in the States, is bantering again with Fisk about the Punisher, and Doom admits he is warming to this challenge. The Kingpin reminds Doom that he has 96 hours left, and Doom reveals that he has discovered the whereabouts of a number of castle's warehouses, all in a row in New Jersey, and he destroys them. But at the same time, Frank breaks into Castle Doom. Microchip waits outside, admitting that he's not built for climbing around inside storm sewers. The Punisher does make it through a few big pipes and grates, only to be greeted by a giant robot. But he's able to destroy that thanks to one of Micro's devices that fries electronics. And then, by commandeering a guard's uniform, he makes it through the castle to Doom's art gallery. The eggs, not difficult to find. It occupies a place of honor beneath a portrait of a gypsy couple. Doom does not need an alarm system, Frank figures. His reputation is sufficient. But as soon as he grabs the egg, put that back. Turning, he finds himself facing not one, not two, but three Doombots. But interestingly enough, the Doombots don't recognize him, and they aren't aware of that battle that we just read in the first half of the issue. The Doombots, they all decide that the first Doom we met was a robot. So the Doombots invite Frank to dinner. That robot must be destroyed. You will assist. To be continued in The Punisher 29, which had a cover date of January 1990. The cover by Bill Reinhold shows Punisher front and center, a gun in each hand, basically a poster shot. Behind him are a half dozen Marvel heroes and villains facing off against each other, with Cap and Thor and Blob among them. Oh, wait, hold on. Does anyone know if Gene Hendricks listens to this show? I'm not sure, but just in case. And Quasar among them. The story, Too Many Dooms, a title which really doesn't make a lot of sense because with Doom, more is more. But nonetheless, this story, Too Many Dooms, was created by the same creative team as the prior issue, a team of Baron, Reinhold, and Farmer. We start in Castle Doom with Frank's unwise and ill-informed commentary. Doc Dooms, some petty despot from a small Baltic country. Makes no sense for him to send a robot after me, so I go to him, but things aren't what they seem. The Punisher is dining in Castle Doom with Dr. Doom, or so he thinks. Spoilers, it's Christoph. Christoph is being polite because the Punisher was attacked by the so-called Renegade Robot Doom. Spoilers, that was the actual factual Dr. Doom. And Christoph wants him, the Punisher, to take care of that robot for him. Again, we're talking about the actual factual Dr. Doom. The pair take a little walk and talk, and Christoph shows off a precious painting of his, Doom's, parents. Okay, look, I'm going to stop with that identification. Just understand that this Doc Doom in the Latveria scenes is actually Christoph playing the part of the Doc. So beneath this painting is displayed the Fabergé egg that the Punisher originally came here to steal. But now, he's got a better idea. At the same time, on the other side of the world, the real Dr. Doom continues to bicker with the Kingpin, Doom explaining that they really aren't all that similar. We share a mutual goal to rid ourselves of our greatest enemies, but that is all we share. Now, beyond that, the Kingpin accuses Doom of beginning to sell chemical weapons to dictators. Doom denies that he would do that and says that it must really be the work of the imposter, a.k.a. Christoph. Then, as the tit-for-tat continues, Doom points to a security monitor showing people protesting the Kingpin in the streets. Captain America shows up before Kingpin's security forces can beat up the protesters. Back in Latveria, Punisher realizes he has to move fast. He talks himself by a guard and makes it all the way up to the castle turret. He faces a particular direction and speaks without speaking, knowing that Microchip should be watching and that he can read lips. The following morning, Frank sets a few tapestries in the art room on fire and escapes with the painting of Doom's parents during the confusion, punishing by death a bunch of Latverian guards along the way. Frank steals a helicopter from the palace and picks up Microchip on his way out of the country. Very well, Punisher, Christoph monologues. Because, look, when you wear that armor, when you're pretending to be Doom, you monologue. I offered my hand in friendship. Now you will learn what it means to incur the wrath of Doom. Of course, all he can actually deliver is the semi-wrath of Christoph, which, just between us, that not nearly as impressive. As Frank and Micro flee Latverian airspace, they are approached by a West German plane. To get away from them, they use a shield priority code, which does buy them some time with the Germans, but it just winds up getting them forced down a little bit later by SHIELD. And David Hasselhoff, and Nick Fury is not pleased with Frank, wondering how he got that security code. Fortunately for Frank, SHIELD is too busy with the current international crime wave to worry too much about him. Fury does realize that Frank is up to something, but frankly, it's not against them. It's not against SHIELD, so he lets Frank and Micro go their way. Doom, meanwhile, is having doubts about the entire Axe of Vengeance scheme, but his focus remains firmly on the Punisher. It is he who concerns me. This has gone on long enough. The Punisher and Micro are now back in the States, and they head to a fancy art gallery. The lady who works there, the curator perhaps, has made a poster for Punisher, a poster version of the Doom painting. From a distance, she promises, nobody will be able to tell the difference. I got the whole thing on digital, should you ever need a copy. That line about things being on digital, should you ever need a copy, kind of reminds me of my buddy Paul Spatero and this issue of this comic book, but enough said about that, okay? The Punisher tapes the copy of the painting. He affixes it to the roof of his van, and he heads purposefully towards an area of the city where there are reports of a battle between the Avengers and some of those superhuman career criminals. The location, by the way, Trump Plaza. That's right. 31 years ago. Trump Plaza. The battle is against Freedom Force, who, fresh off the events of Avengers 312, seem to be itching for a rematch. This is basically the scene from the cover with Thor and Cap visible. And yes, Gene Hendricks, even though I don't see Quasar clearly on this page, in our hearts, we all know he's there. And as the Punisher intended, a Doom satellite sees the copy of the painting atop the van. And he responds in a coolly calculating fashion.
After them.
The Punisher negotiates the return of the actual painting in exchange for his life. Doom agrees. Incidentally, I had lunch with the real Doom, and he says you're just a nutso robot. But Doom makes a compelling argument in response, saying that he, the real Doom, would never permit a common mercenary like you to invade his home. Sick burn, Doc. Sick burn. He gives his word to the Punisher that he will not pursue him, and Microchip confirms to Frank that Doom's word is good, because Microchip is the brains of the operation. As he's leaving, Doom comments again on the state of the entire Acts of Vengeance plan. The whole concept of this event. These dolts need guidance if they are to prevail over Mr. Fantastic and his ilk. The end. So, what did I think of this? First, the big picture view. Let's start there. Mike Maron is a solid, legitimate comic book writer. And just through no real plan of this, just by raiding various cheap bins over the years, I've actually read most of his Punisher run up to this point, probably 20 to 25 of the prior issues. Obviously, Baron had a handle at this point on Frank and Microchip, and certainly those aspects of the issues really worked for me, those characterizations, those bits. And there are good ways to write the Punisher and bad ways to write the Punisher. That applies to live-action portrayals as well as comic book versions. But at least as far as I've read, I think Baron more often than not landed on the good way of handling the Punisher. Of course, you have to like that type of story, that type of character, understand where it's coming from. Your mileage certainly may vary. I don't remember where I've talked about this. It was probably here on Doomspeak, but that is the concept of the four types of characters that Marvel, in particular, was especially good at giving us in this era, while DC was basically putting their characters in two categories, hero or villain, on opposite sides of that spectrum. But while they were doing that, Marvel was placing a lot of their characters in two categories that exist between those two extremes of hero and villain. And that is in the sympathetic villain and the antihero. And in 1991, Doom was often cast as a sympathetic villain. And the Punisher had turned himself into one of the lead poster children for the comic book antihero. I would propose that there have been moments in the three decades since then that perhaps, occasionally, they've switched those roles. But I think that sort of makes them interesting fits for this event. There are some similarities between the two. They both occupy this middle space between hero and villain. I mean, perhaps those similarities are such that neither character would be willing to admit that, but that actually made them sort of, from a certain point of view, equals. Not in power, but maybe in approach, attitude. So it seems at first like an odd matchup, but weirdly enough, especially I think with Baron behind it, it kind of worked pretty well for me. That being said, Punisher turning himself into a jewel thief and then art thief may have been an odd choice. That seems a bit out of his wheelhouse to me. But what Baron did with that, I think, was that he gave us a good reason for Punisher coming up with that plan, for heading to Latveria, for stealing eventually the painting, and then pasting the posterized version to the top of his van for Doom to see from the sky. That all worked well enough in the context of the story as presented. And I think we can use that as a general comment. I think the overall storyline, those plotting steps where you go from here to there to here to there, both in the Punisher storyline, which was our focus here, but also the Doom storyline, I think those actions, I think, flowed well. Baron is not really a superhero guy in terms of what it seems he likes to write. So I imagine, this is complete conjecture, by the way, but I imagine that having to include Marvel continuity elements, Doom, Kingpin, Fury, the Freedom Force, the Avengers, must not have been his favorite bits of working at Marvel. But he did bring in those elements well, tying in the Punisher to the greater Acts of Vengeance event. So again, good job on that. But this isn't Mike Baron speak, or even Punisher speak, Consarnet, this is Doom speak. So we have to address how Doom is portrayed here. And there are definitely some things that are done well. First, Doom has a lot of robots. And Baron gives us lots of robots. And there's always the question, when you think you're talking to Doom, as to whether you're actually talking to Doom or to a robot. That is an occupational hazard of conversations with Doom throughout the depth and breadth of comics history. So you might be talking to Doom, you might be talking to a robot, or in this case, the Punisher is talking to the Pretender, to Christoph. And that confusion is played out in the character of the Punisher. He does destroy a Doom robot. Then he's actually defeated by the real Doom, who he later comes to believe is in fact a mad robot. He meets three more Doombots in the castle and has dinner, as we said, with someone he believes is Doom, but who is not. Now that experience, what Frank is experiencing during these issues in terms of Doom's identity, is recognizable to anyone who has read Doom stories throughout the years. You always assume you're dealing with the actual Doom himself, but always with the realization that the story you're reading, the conversation you're currently engaged in, may be retconned years later to make that Doom a Doombot or a Pretender, or who knows, since it's the Marvel Universe, maybe a Skrull. I'm just saying, we have all been in the Punisher's shoes in terms of relating to someone you think is Doom, but isn't. And the scene of Doom early on driving a tank against the Punisher, come on, that's epic. Now, the mystical, magical side of Doom, that is not included here. There, you can possibly say there's a wink to it, with the minor exception, I suppose, of, and forgive the language, it was used within the issue, the picture of the gypsy couple, Doom's parents. So that side of Doom's history is not emphasized. What we do get is a technological Doom, a Doom of robots, and a tactical Doom, a Doom of masterful preparation for his battles. And that characterization of Doom, which is not complete because it's missing the mystical elements, but in the context of this story, head-to-head with the Punisher, it works. But we do have to address the fundamental flaw in this story. And that is that Doom loses. He and Punisher sort of end in a draw, but he does lose his bet with Kingpin. And that, frankly, is a problem. I assume that the ancient historians from back in those long ago days of 1991, I mean, there's probably a transcription error as the story of this epic tale went from ancient language to medieval language to modern English, from the traditional oral epics to today's modern sequential storytelling. Look, sometimes throughout the spans of time and space, elements of stories get lost, things happen. But what is right here is that Doom completely disrespects both the Kingpin and the Punisher, feeling quite rightly that those two are minor players, just street-level operators, simply not operating on the same heightened plane as Doom. I confess that going into this, I did not know what to expect from these issues. I was avoiding reading them in my Punisher run because I just wasn't so sure of the matchup with Punisher, and I wasn't so sure, to be honest, about the Axe of Vengeance event in its entirety. But I was certainly pleased to have read these and pleased by how much I enjoyed reading these. Thank you, Derek William Crabb, for organizing this whole event and for getting this on my plate, for getting this on the Doomspeak schedule. Before we completely wrap up, let me reiterate the other participants of the Mary Marvel March event. Again, Derek Crabb of the Fanholes put this event together. And the podcasts that are participating include, and I apologize to any of my colleagues who I may have missed, but the planned participating podcasts that I am aware of include
Third Degree Burn,
Back to the Bins, Avenger Spotlight, Coffee and Comics, The Comic Book Time Machine, Fire and Water, Head Speaks, Into the Weird, Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, Justice, not entirely dissimilar to Lightning, Long Box Crusade, Married with Comics, The Quantum Cast, hello, Gene Hendricks, Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast, Rolled Spine, and Views from the Long Box. So check out all of those shows for more Acts of Vengeance coverage. Now let me take a couple minutes here to chat about what we've got coming up for this podcast, now that the ongoing Doctor Doom series is over, and now that this podcast crossover is over. And I do have some thoughts about what the future may hold. Now, first off, the way that the relatively geeky schedule is going to fall, I don't anticipate an April 2021 Doomspeak. And once we come back in May, we'll probably be on a most every month schedule. That's what I'm thinking, at least for a little bit, is for every other episode for us to pick up with a series that we started coverage on the quarter bin and continued a little bit here, and that is Doom 2099. I'm guessing we'll do multiple issues of that per episode, but I don't have that all planned out yet in terms of where natural breaks in the storytelling will fall. But that's going to be the primary through line for a while here on Doomspeak is the Doom 2099 book. Now, the other episodes, every other episode, I'm thinking we'll just work in books from across the range of Doom publishing. That could be the FF, of course, but it could also be Spidey, Iron Man, Supervillain Team-Up again, Squirrel Girl, many, many other possible titles, because among the gloriousness of Doom is that he interacts with all the corners of the Marvel Universe. Because think about it. If you were in the Marvel Universe, wouldn't you want to interact with Doom? That's right. Of course you would. Now, I have to caution that none of the smart podcasters ever announced their plans, because things always change. But sitting here towards the end of March 2021, that's what I think we'll do at least for a while. Again, that's alternate episodes covering Doom 2099 issues with stories from any possible place in the entire rest of the Marvel Universe. So if you have any feedback on this episode, either of these issues, the future plans of the podcast, or anything related to our good doctor, the rightful ruler of Latveria, don't hesitate to contact me. You can do that via email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on our Facebook or blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening. Take care. And hail Doom.
Hail Doom! Hail Doom!